Rodriguez and Price.
He's Rodriguez, I'm Price.
A show about markets, media, and the mayhem yet to come. It's been a little while since we were on, but we're back now. And Tim, lots to talk about.
Absolutely. What's happened since the last time we were on air? I think the two big developments have been political ones, quite apart from the snap election here. You've had a deterioration in apparent stability in Syria and and Afghanistan, and you've had a real deterioration in North Korea. And what interests me about this stuff is that the client impact of that we've seen is the clients are saying, what action do we need to take? What do we need to do about our portfolios in the light of these events? And it's an understandable reaction, but by the same token, it is just more noise.
What particularly is worse now than it was before? Because these areas have always...
Yeah, they've been flashpoints for years. I think what's slightly different about it this time is that now we're having conversations that include the words Donald Trump and nukes in short order. Yeah, and that's a little... That is genuinely something to be concerned about. Do you not think?
Well, yeah, absolutely. To be honest, I try not to look at that sort of news.
For sure, because this then brings the whole question of what's actually important and what's not. Yeah. So this gets us on to the topic of what Trump would call fake news, and what I'm increasingly minded to call fake news as well, which is, in other words, what's important and what's just noise. And the thing is, as far as all conventional media are concerned, even the sort of the pecking order of the talking points is ultimately somebody else's decision.
Well, the thing with the portfolio is that, as far as markets are concerned, as far as world information is concerned, you never really know how it's going to impact anyway.
For sure. So, I mean, that's absolutely right. There's an interesting thought experiment I've been sort of mulling over recently, which is, imagine someone or yourself went back in time to 2007 and said, okay, here's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You're going to have an near extinction level event on Wall Street. Lehman Brothers will fail. There's going to be bailouts for all the banks. Trillions of dollars, pounds, euros printed and flushed into the system to keep the banks alive. Then more recently, Brexit will happen, or they will vote for Brexit, and Donald Trump is going to be elected president of the United States.
Dow 1000.
Exactly. Right. If in that sort of thought experiment, if a Terminator type thing had come back in time, if you'd known precisely the political or market events, how would you probably, I think, because there's no clear answer, how would you be positioned for that? I think most people, if they'd had that sort of statement of facts, they'd say, my God, this is apocalyptic. Yeah. So they'd be loading up the truck on, and also, by the way, interest rates driven to zero, and in some markets below zero. In that environment, clearly you'd buy bonds, you'd buy treasuries, for example, you'd probably buy gold, and you'd short the hell out of just about everything else.
Yeah, that's
which shows the complete, effectively, non-value add of being even being able to predict successfully what happens at the sort of the news level.
That precisely explains why I use charts and technicals, because the news flow never follows what the market wants to do. The market is an independent kind of body that moves regardless of the news, and people attach the news to what's happening in order to try and explain it.
News follows markets rather than the other way around.
Exactly. And, I've seen this happening so many times before. Sometimes the glove fits and the news fits what the market does. Sometimes it doesn't. So, sterling is going up. It has been going up. I've been bullish on sterling. Mm. It's now, about to break through 120, although it's having a little breather on the week against the euro. But they'll attach whatever news. If sterling was near its lows against the euros, they'd say, well, a shock election has caused sterling to collapse. And now they'll say the potential for a conservative majority, if that's what it is what will make it go higher or whatever. So they're positioning the news to follow what the markets are doing and not the other way
around. In relation, you've brought up the election, which you can't really avoid as a topic.
Yeah.
What would your response be to, let's say, equity market action as far as the FTSE?
Just keep watching sterling in the world markets, and sterling is rallying, so therefore the FTSE is going to go down. The FTSE's already started.
So a stronger currency, weaker stock market.
Yeah, simple as that. I kept saying it. The fact that sterling was so weak, it's going to be great for the UK. All the numbers are going to look better. Brexit's a side issue. people forget that the fact that the UK is leaving the euro is actually bad for the euro.
Mm. Well, we were never in it.
Well, we're never in it, but I mean, what I meant, the eurozone, yeah, right, effectively backing away from the project. We're not moving towards the project, we're moving away from the project. And what I think would be very sensible if Europe took the stance of actually trying to work out a very amicable divorce where everyone...
A grown-up, sensible thing,
instead of, you know...
Handbags at dawn.
Exactly, exactly. That's not going to help anyone. And anyway, that's all a sideshow, because if Le Pen gets in, you know...
All bets are really well and truly off.
All bets are really off. And we know it's, you know, it's dead in the water anyway, as far as... Because what's happening with Greece, they're going to need another bailout, they're going to need to leave the euro. Absolutely, you cannot get away from that fact that they just need to leave the euro. That's it. And we're one day closer to all of that. Now, amongst all of that, the S&P is, since we were last on, and I was saying this is the Fibonacci level, it could be the top here, but this might be another level, it's gone nowhere, it's gone sideways. So that's really suspicious that it hasn't gone down, even though a lot of the European stock markets...
Or reached a new high.
Yeah, but it's more suspicious that it hasn't gone down, because I think most people are waiting or trying to predict the top. So it suggests that we've got one more squeeze in it, but I'm going to be guided by the next breakout from a very tight technical pattern. Mm. But I think it could be one... What would really upset the market would be one last blast into a new high, and then for it to come down. So, but nothing's happened since our last discussion. So,
but on the political side, I was struck by, and I brought some of it along. I was struck by Ambrose Evans-Pritchard, a piece he wrote, I think, in yesterday's Telegraph, and I'd certainly, relative to him, I'd underestimated, in a sense, the kind of the bull outlook, certainly for Sterling, out of what's happened in relation to the snap election. So, this is a few highlights from his piece. Assuming that Theresa May wins a landslide victory on June the 8th, and I guess that's the one sort of potential storm cloud, that's so priced in by everybody that it's wrong, that she doesn't get the clear mandate that everyone's expecting her to get. But either way, assuming that she wins a landslide victory on June the 8th, she will be, quote, the only leader of a major EU state, or, well, soon to be leaving EU state, with a crushing mandate and the backing of a unified parliament. Now, that's an interesting point. I had not thought so much about, actually, this is not the game plan. This is not how things are supposed to happen. The outcome that the UK has actually become some kind of oasis of stability in the middle of this it looked nonsensical months ago, but now it looks plausible. It looks genuinely plausible.
That's sort of
an extra 2 years on the calendar to negotiate as well.
The most important thing I think you can ever have in terms of business in any country is your ability to control and have proper, organised and respectable law. And I think that is, I'm not saying it's not outside of Europe, but I'm just saying when you come to Europe as an individual, come to the UK as an individual, as business, you know we've got a great legal system, which is, you know...
Envy of the world.
Envy of the world. And I think that is really important. That's more important for business than I think a lot of other things. Yes, lower tax rates, etc., can help and do help. But yeah, I've always said the political issues aside, you know, and I don't want to get into the immigration thing because I think immigration's a good thing, not a bad thing. And people put Brexit and immigration together, and I don't. I want more people to come to the UK of all lives and descriptions, because you don't want, you know, these places out in the sticks to have just, you know, nobody there. You know?
But I think one of the sort of the key bones of contention in relation to the migration topic is, unless I'm mistaken, in the original language of what I guess was the Treaty of Rome, it's about free movement of labour.
Yeah.
And then somewhere along the line it morphed into free movement of people, which is not the same thing. So labour's one thing, but just having effectively economic migrants is clearly another.
Yeah, obviously something that's caused a lot of political problems
and will continue for the foreseeable future.
But it has through the ages anyway.
Sure. You know. Just a few other highlights from the Ambrose piece from the Telegraph.
Yeah.
You can't really talk about Europe without mentioning Italy. Italy, above all, is a political accident waiting to happen again. Same old, same old. Beppe Grillo's 5-star movement leads the polls by a staggering 8 percentage point. It has suffered no erosion after its latest plans for a parallel fiscal currency, a Trojan horse for the lira. Now, again, this is not new news, but it's just interesting. The extent to which the pendulum swung, as far as, let's say, the conventional news media from, oh, my God, it's all going wrong, what on earth is the UK doing, to all of a sudden the UK doesn't look quite so bad anymore. Absolutely. In the light of this presumed new mandate for Theresa May.
Katia Adler from the After Brexit story on the BBC.
Which
was your recommendation. We mentioned it a couple of times. You know, she talked about the five-star party in Italy that was gaining traction and showed the dissent that was rising up from the people about the euro. And this is something, again, ultimately was very predictable right at the beginning of the project. You know, people ultimately will make the decision and they will vote in for somebody who wants change. This, I thought, would happen in Greece much quicker. It was a couple of years ago that I really thought there would be some big changes and ultimately Greece would be out, but it seems to have limped along. But I think this year has got to be the crux year, you know, towards the end of the year when they need another bailout. That could be the straw that breaks the
Well, that I think would be Ambrose Evans-Pritchard's view, and just I'll give him his sort of last quote for this piece.
Yeah.
My point is not that the euro is about to break up. Mervyn King, former governor of the Bank of England, says the tragedy of monetary union is that Europe's political class may go to extreme lengths to hold the euro together regardless of economic logic, but that perpetuates and deepens the political crisis. Sounds like you'd be in a broad agreement with that, with that view.
Yeah, definitely. I've had that view sort of statically from 1998, I think, and you know, moreover, I was sort of hoping that in 1999 the euro would sort of fall apart very quickly and would be left aside. But it's as I say, you can't. The timing of the market is very, very difficult. You can't say when it will happen, just that it will happen. And it's like the top in the S&P. It will happen. It's going to happen. It's just a question of when and how much further it goes before it does.
You cited the S&P 500. We haven't got slides this week, but yeah. Are there any stock markets that you do like from a technical perspective?
Well, actually, you know, we've also talked about Japan, and I've got to say I really like Japan. I watched the video at Master Investor. I wasn't actually at Master Investor, but I did watch Jim Mellon. I think he's a great speaker.
Is he still bullish on Japan?
He's bullish. He was talking about Japan and saying he likes it, and it sort of made me think back to the fact that I like it and you like it, but you say that nobody else likes it, and I was thinking,
who are all these no one else?
Yeah, who exactly is this no one else that likes it? It seems like a lot of people. So that made me think, maybe I shouldn't like it. Because it could be a little too early.
It might become a bit consensual.
But his timing's usually very good, and technically it's moving high. I mean, it's consolidated a bit, so I really like it.
One thing from a fundamental rather than a technical thing that interested me, I was unaware of. Everyone knows I certainly bang on about the S&P 500 and the Shiller PE, which is now 29 times, roughly the same level it was in 1929, and way higher than it was in 1987 when you had a market collapse that really came out of nowhere and didn't do any lasting damage in that instance. What I was unaware of, but I was interested to see, the Shiller PE for the FTSE 100, have a guess.
No,
15 times. It's not expensive on that basis. Not expensive at all.
Right, okay.
However, the FTSE 250 is something way higher. It's double that. So, again, the small cap, which is intriguing, not least because you'd think that the FTSE has been potentially is more vulnerable on the back of, you know, some of these geopolitical anti-globalisation Brexit type developments, but ain't necessarily so on a valuation basis.
But that's based within that metric. You've got interest rates, which are at historical lows.
Sure.
So therefore, it's going to look, and that in itself is something that is. We've seen before in Japan where ultra-low interest rates make the stock market, inverted commas, look attractive, but actually it's not really when you have a deflationary spiral, which is potentially what we're moving towards.
Would you go along with then with this sort of, thesis that, as I've quoted another manager telling me back in 2000, 2001, that Japan was the dress rehearsal, the rest of the world may be the main event?
Do you have
some sympathy with that view?
Definitely. So to answer your question, Japan seems to be the safe haven. Let's see what China does with their slowdown, probably weaken the currency more. That's not going to be good for us or the Western countries that particularly the US, that are trying to sell products to the rest of the world. And it's the last standout as far as markets are concerned. Everything else in Europe is either turning down or has turned down on various degrees, like Greece's sort of down here and Italy's sort of here and the UK's up here but near its top, and the S&P is actually sort of breaking into new highs. But they're all degrees of one's a bear market, one's a bull market. And that fragmentation is what we saw in the bond markets, you see. You had exactly the same situation. There are three standouts, the UK, Germany, and the US, and then they all turned. And so that's what I'm expecting from the FTSE and the S&P.
In terms of those people who are looking for putative safe havens, you've highlighted bonds. Any view on, say, US Treasuries? Because for me, the US Treasury market seems like a comparative safe haven, not least because it just yields much more than a lot of the rest of the developed world.
I think it will, the yield will continue to rise, and you'll just lose out on your capital.
And gold. Any thoughts on gold?
Well, yeah, it seems to be edging up. I'm not a bull of gold. I know you are, but it is edging up quite nicely to the point where I'm thinking, okay, short term, like short to medium term, next 3 to 6 months. Bit more upside, certainly wouldn't fight that, but it, longer term I don't like it, but for now actually I wouldn't stand in the way of this little rally that's formed.
Cool.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, Tim, thank you very much. We'll see you again next time when we will hopefully have more color on this mother of all tops, which is coming. I promise you it's coming. So thanks for watching. See you next time.